What's happening across Connecticut? Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600.
First of all, Governor Lamont, how are you feeling after your hip surgery?
I'm feeling pretty good, Melissa. It's a pretty big deal, though. And I've been taking it pretty cautiously for the last week, but I'm getting around. Don't need the cane so much anymore. So that's progress.
I mean, I'm very impressed with you, I have to say. Like, you literally had the surgery done, and then I think you did a press conference like the next day. I thought, this guy's a beast. I was very impressed with you. So I'm glad you're healing.
Yeah. I'm not sure the drugs had worn off as yet.
Well, I will pray that you have a very quick recovery. I'm glad to hear you're doing okay. Governor, as you can imagine, these last 2 weeks have been crazy on our station. We have gotten dozens and dozens of calls. Our demographic is specifically like 55 and up, so we've gotten a lot of calls about the COVID vaccine rollout. So got a lot of questions for you. First of all, I got a very repetitive question, good question, from a lot of teachers in our area. Repeatedly, since the beginning of the pandemic, education has been so important to you. You have wanted your kids back in school. You want our teachers in school learning. So our teachers are kind of questioning, why weren't they prioritized like we saw the healthcare workers prioritized? Why weren't they first to go for phase 1B?
We followed the CDC guidelines on that. We did frontline healthcare workers at hospitals, folks in nursing homes. That's where most of the complications are. Those are the folks, in the hospitals. So we really wanted to make a big difference, keep capacity there. And now we're, teachers and others are in the first group, but we're going to prioritize 65 and above. It's easy to do, get them out quickly. They're the ones most likely to, suffer real risk.
What is sort of the latest, though, with the rollout? Because we're hearing about this national shortage of the vaccine. And, I mean, unfortunately, we heard, like, from Stanford's mayor, for example, we're turning people away at this point for appointments, which is not good.
What is good is that every vaccine Connecticut gets, which is about 50,000 a week, we're getting those shots administered more timely than just about any state in the country. We were recognized for that, Melissa. They gave us an additional 50,000 shots just this week. That's going to allow us to take care of more people. But you're right. I mean, we could administer five times that number of shots if we had more vaccines. And I'm chairman of the governor's team that's supposed to be negotiating this with the federal government. I'm going to be pushing hard to see where are the bottlenecks? What is slowing things down? And what can we expect over the next 2 months?
Yeah, congratulations, by the way, on that. And I'm very glad that you are such a big voice in that. Have you gotten any kind of correspondence this week about what's going on, or that's still sort of wishy-washy? It's very confusing to explain why we don't seem to be seeing the amount of vaccines that, I feel like we see a lot of headlines. Oh, they're coming out with another million here and another, millions over here. But like we're not seeing them. But maybe we are. I don't know if you're getting more clarity than we are, the residents here.
A little bit more. What I can tell you is we are getting the vaccines that we're supposed to be getting. We have about a week's window on that. That's close to 50,000. They've arrived pretty much on time to the right locations. I know about problems in other states. Right now, we're not having any of those problems. What we can expect in mid-February is what I'm going to drive hard on. A lot of rumors out there that Pfizer and Moderna are going to be able to double their capacity, in 4 to 6 weeks. We've got to know that so we can plan accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, because even with phase 1B, I know you're sort of in this changes every day place, so it's kind of hard to make those kinds of predictions. But do you feel like phase 1B is too big? Other than basically the general population, it's like everyone is fitting into this phase 1B as of February 1st, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think the CDC copped out. They said, let's include everybody except for
me,
teenagers and healthy 35-year-olds and Melissa.
Right. Yeah, so, exactly.
And otherwise, Governor, you make the tough choices about how you prioritize within that. It's about half of our overall population.
It's a lot of people.
You know what we're doing? we're getting a long way through 75 and above. I think in the next 2 weeks plus, that group, we already got them more than 20% vaccinated. That's making the difference. Our infection rate's going down slightly. So I think you're going to see real progress over the next 60 days.
Governor Lamont, I also got a number of questions from our listeners who have parents who are in the 90 age range, and they are homebound. And they have questions about if they can't leave the house, how exactly can they get vaccinated? Like, are we working on home nurses being able to do that? How do they book an appointment if they can't get out of their homes to actually get that vaccine?
Yeah, we're working closely with the health providers. They're reaching out to those homebound. We've got mobile vaccination vans and people that are getting to them. A little tougher to do, no question about it. Nursing homes are easier. Everybody was in one place.
Sure.
But this is a group that's not getting left behind.
Okay, so we have mobile units and things like that that would be rolling out. Any idea when?
Oh, they've started already. We're going to... a variety of different neighborhoods, a lot of folks that are in underserved communities, very dense neighborhoods, those that aren't likely to drive to Rentschler Field and get their appointment, those that aren't really sharp on the internet and find that kind of complicated to sign up. We're reaching out to them and we're going to them.
Okay. Is there a way, Governor, that people can get on that radar? So say, I'm somebody who lives in Fairfield County. I'm not affiliated really with a hospital. I'm homebound, let's just say. Is there a way that they can make sure they don't get passed over?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, number one, their healthcare providers are reaching out to them. Number two, we have an online platform that seems to be a lot easier for people under the age of 70 to navigate than people over the age of 75. So we also have a hotline, which I should know off the top of my head, but 211 works as well. So that if you are, but only if you're over 75, we can't have the other 3 million people all calling that line. You'll get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
But those over 75 that find the BAMS technology platform, a little complicated, give us a call. We'll take care of you.
Are you guys experiencing any issues with the BAMS hotline or with the website at all? I know some people have had issues with even like booking their second appointment. Is that because of the shortage, or are we having any issues with the hotline or anything?
Not so much that I have heard of. There may be a little complicated for people who use it. Frankly, the VAMS is what they're doing on the federal basis. We've inherited. We've got a new interface with it, trying to make it easier for people. It is a little clunky, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a little bit. And I know, too, I was sure that when people went for their first vaccine that they would, like, get called out to and told, hey, this is when you could do your second vaccination. But it sounds like even they're being pushed back now, which is kind of a little bit scary. Like, for people who've already gotten their first dose, they're being told, we actually don't know when we could book you again because we've booked all these people for February for their first doses. So that's a little complicated.
But that should not be the case. Let me say two things on that, Melissa. One, we have that second dose for you. It is scheduled. You should be notified 3 or 4 weeks afterwards. And by the way, if for some reason that doesn't happen, if it's a week or two later, it doesn't make any difference. It's not like it only works if it's 3 weeks to the day after you got that first vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Talking to Governor Ned Lamont this morning. And Governor Lamont, I don't know if you've heard this story. I would imagine you have. Did you hear about the massive party that happened in Trumbull that was held by a Bridgeport City worker?
Yeah.
So I want to talk about it a little bit. Do you mind?
No.
So it's pretty devastating, I think, for a lot of our listeners. I was pretty appalled by it, especially because, we've been told to wear our masks, to, skip holidays, skip celebrations, graduations, things like that. And I think we've tried to be creative and make up for those things. I find the decision that was made by this person was pretty appalling. And I think that there were a lot of city leaders and representatives at that party who have sat there and have said for people to follow rules, and they've broken your executive orders, including like New Haven's health director, Maritza Bond, who said that she was at that party. Another shocking one that came out overnight as well is, in fact, State Representative Chris Rosario, who was at that party. First of all, your response to it, and if this was someone in your administration, how would you handle it?
Without getting into individual people, let me just tell you, it is shocking, appalling, and wrong. You are risking not just yourselves and your family and the people at the party, and those people at the party go back to the community. And we're coming down hard. If it's a commercial establishment, there was one in Bridgeport, we fined them $10,000. We're pretty strict. This is a private home, is my understanding, so the fines are less. But it's fines for the people who organized the party, and it's fines for the people that went to the party. You know, first level of defense is usually at the municipal level, but I can guarantee you that public health is following up on this right now. If there were a lot of public officials there, lead by example. Come on, guys.
But, like, what do you think is the right move from here? Because I think it's really sending a message where, quite frankly, Governor, I think a lot of people believe, you know, practice what you preach, and they didn't. And I think it just shows an example of, we're going to, you know, say what we, you know, do what we say, but not as we do. And I think, I know we don't want to pinpoint certain people, but only because he's admitted it. Like, we have a state representative who serves as the deputy majority leader, and he was there, and he didn't report it, and he didn't follow your protocols. And I know how serious you take this. So do you make them resign? Like, how do you set a precedence for the rest of the state to actually follow these rules?
Well, this is the first I've heard of those specifics, but this is how we do it. We point this out. We find them. We hold them accountable. We shame them when it comes to conversations on radio. I want the broader community to know that we can't stand for this. We're getting so close to the finish line. Mm-hmm. We've had hundreds of thousands of vaccinations done. We're leading the nation there. And just in another 2 or 3 months, if we can just stay close to home, it makes an enormous difference. And I'll double down on that. We now have this highly infectious strain, South Africa, wherever it's coming from. And we've got to be extra careful right now, because if I can keep the vaccinations ahead of this infectious strain, we win. If the infectious strain overwhelms us, here we go again. Mm-hmm. Stay home.
Yeah. Well, and Governor Lamont, I appreciate your comments. I will say I did bring this up to Mayor Joe Ganim in Bridgeport and was very much dismissed 3 times, actually, about it. And I had suggested to him very respectfully that I don't know, you know, what can be done that would make a difference. But if I could suggest something, I just feel like as someone who's buried 3 people because of COVID last year, I've contracted COVID myself, as you know, and so many of our listeners have done the same thing. You know, maybe it would be a good idea for anyone who thinks it's okay to go to these kinds of parties. You know, maybe they should spend a day on a COVID floor in a hospital, or spend a day in a nursing home watching people be separated from their families. It's pretty devastating, and I just think this was pretty ignorant, quite frankly.
Keep talking about it. You give me some information I didn't know before. I'm going to follow up with our Department of Public Health and make sure that there are consequences.
I really appreciate that, Governor. Seriously, thank you. Thank you so much. And I appreciate your time. I know I've taken up a lot of it, but I appreciate you coming on every other week. Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Avoid those parties. No parties.
That's right. No parties.
What's happening in Hartford and how it affects you? Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly joins Melissa in the morning now on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself, Melissa?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for asking. Happy Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
You busy over there? What's going on over there?
Yeah, I just had to drop something to my son. He's playing high school hockey, and so it's the CIAC has allowed the teams to start to practice. So
I totally get it.
I
get it.
Beginning that.
You're balancing dad life and work life. I get it. I totally get it.
Absolutely.
I get that. Well, actually, speaking of hockey, you know, I was curious. I know you're a big hockey fan. So does being the Connecticut Senate Republican leader feel sometimes like you're almost like a goalie trying to defend the net against, you know, I would say the onslaught of attempted tax hikes? Or is that a little dramatic?
well, you know, it Unfortunately, to an extent it is, because here in Connecticut, it appears that every time there is a problem, the Connecticut Democrats' solution is focused on the middle class wallet. It's always a tax hike. It's always the middle class needs to do more, as if for the past 10 years with the two largest tax increases, middle class families haven't met the sacrifice that the state of Connecticut had asked them to do. And that adds to and contributes to making Connecticut more unaffordable and more financially stressful for middle class families. So, yes, I mean, I feel like that's you're always trying to defend against another attempt at putting the hand of government in people's pocket.
I mean, do you worry, Senator Kelly, because now the Democrats are the majority in every aspect, the House, the Senate, our administration. Do you feel like it's going to be harder for you to defend tax hikes for the middle class? I know you're very for the middle class, which I appreciate because I'm in that group. Right. You know, do you feel like it's going to be harder now with the way things were voted in?
Well, clearly it didn't make it easier. And you see all the new ideas that are coming out. We heard, you know, a couple of weeks ago, just at the holidays, that Governor Lamont wanted to add a 17-cent gas tax. Yesterday, the new Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, is talking about a federal increase in the gas tax. These are very regressive taxes, and they hit somebody that might be working minimum wage at a Dunkin' Donuts a lot harder than it's going to hit a hedge fund manager from Greenwich. That means a lot to the family that's minimum wage. And this is who the Democrats claim they support and work for. But when they get all the power, that's exactly who they go after. And what we're hoping to do is to be a voice like we are here, to just bring truth to the table, to bring light to the subject. And I believe that once we clear out a lot of the, I'm going to say, the national narrative and the confusion that the Democrats bring to the electoral process, and we start focusing on local Connecticut issues that affect our neighborhoods, that will resonate with Connecticut families.
Well, and I would even go as far as to say the national narrative that's been falsely put on Republicans. I would say Republicans have also been casted in a horrible light. And it's unfortunate that that's the way it is looked at. We're talking this morning with State Senator Kevin Kelly. Now, Senator Kelly, do you mind if I read a quick quote that actually came from you this week? And I was just curious. I'd love to get your reaction. Do you mind?
No, absolutely.
So I saw a quote from you that said, we appreciate the admission by Democrats that Connecticut is an expensive place to live and raise a family. It's about time. What did you mean by that?
Well, that came on the heels of a state representative that felt that we need to give Connecticut families a child tax credit. And I agree that we need to give Connecticut families a tax break. It's just now, finally, I think Democrats are starting to see that it's becoming too expensive for middle class families. And, you know, I was glad to see that they wanted to propose the tax cut. But what that meant to me was that the admission that they're recognizing that their government and the programs and the way that they go about this is hurting middle class families. It's why we're dead last in personal income growth, dead last in job growth. They've had all the power for 10 years. And this economy is a result of those poor policy choices. And we do need to focus on middle class families.
On a national scale, I did see for good reason that you're supportive of the Biden-Harris administration. I think that that's a good precedent to hold, that that is our president and our vice president. I think we should always respect whoever is running our country. And I love the fact that you've said that. You also said, though, that they have a tremendous opportunity to show the American people that actions speak louder than words by working in a bipartisan way. Just from an outlook from, you know, from just like a normal, regular resident, taking off my reporter hat for a second, it seems like President Biden has the intention to go bipartisan. Like, I think he does want to be open and restore the idea of democracy and restore the idea of just because you have a party next to your name doesn't mean you have to go the party lines. I don't know if I feel the exact same way about the vice president per se, but I do think that President Biden, it seems like, wants to go that route. Do you have faith that he actually will, or do you believe that the Democratic Party is going to kind of pressure him into a situation where he continues on the Democratic Party line?
Well, clearly, Inauguration Day was historic because for the first time we have a woman as a vice president.
Hey,
so
yes.
I think that was huge. I think it's very encouraging, and it sends a message across our country that women can get to the highest offices in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as looking at the issues like you're talking about, you know, I was raised in what I call a mixed family. My dad was a Republican. My mom's a Democrat. And neither was right nor wrong. They all fought for and wanted to make sure the Kelly family was protected and survived. And that's what I think we need, is to listen to one another and have a common goal, not paint each other with broad brushes. You were talking about violence in the lead up to this break. And, you know, when you have an event and then you say blame aside, rather than look at, there are forces in our country, unfortunately, that are want to be disruptive mm-hmm. and disrupt government. And they use the political process, the marketplace of ideas, peaceful protests as the vehicle to do that. And that's what we need to do, is get to the issues, focus on solutions. And if you stay on the problem, you'll have a good outcome. It's when you start making it personal or blaming the other side with broad brushes that you end up people not listening to you. People end up talking past individuals, and I don't think that benefits our government or our communities.
State Senator Kevin Kelly, I always appreciate checking in with you every week. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
You bet. Thank you, Melissa.
So this was in a previous newscast earlier this week. You can leave your mark on Fairfield permanently, whether it's for your family or your business. You can purchase a brick that plays a part in completing a longtime project in town. It's right at the Stratfield and Fairfield Woods Roads, and it's at those four corners there. I grew up in Fairfield, so I know it very well. I used to scooter down to the Stratfield supermarket there, and now it's the Goddard School, but it's right in that area there, and a lot of work trying to go into those four corners. And to talk a little bit about this and the brick fundraising campaign, Dylan O'Connor as well as Aaron Lopez are both here. And guys, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. So, Dylan, I'm going to start with you because you're with the Stratfield Village Association. First of all, what is it that you guys do? Why did you target this area in particular?
Yes. So I'm with the Stratfield Village Association. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And basically what we do, as I tell my kids, is we're a voice for the neighborhood. So we try to, take on projects that are going to improve the safety and the beauty of our neighborhood. And, that's really all we are. We interface with a lot of the town officials and just make sure that our neighborhood is well looked after.
So why specifically this four corner area? Like, has it been sort of an eyesore? What made you guys focus on this specifically?
Yeah, well, so like you, I grew up in Fairfield, and I actually used to go to the Stratfield supermarket, too. I would play baseball at Owen Fish, and
yep.
then I'd get my candy at the supermarket. And as you know, the supermarket went out of business back in, it was before 2012.
Long time ago, yeah.
Long time ago, and Walgreens was, trying to put a location in there, and at the time, the neighborhood didn't want a Walgreens there. They thought it was against the charm of the neighborhood. Long story short, Walgreens didn't go in, but what was left was a dilapidated building that sat there forever. And so I live in the neighborhood. I've lived in Fairfield my whole life, and, I would drive by the market every day, and it drove me nuts.
Yeah, it was sad.
It looked so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So Jamie McCusker, who is the co-president of the SVA, and I decided to bring the FDA back, and we just wanted to beautify this area because it needed some love. If you've driven by there, you can see it's a great part of our neighborhood, but it's in desperate need of a facelift. So we've been working on this for 3 years, and I'm happy to say that we're, you know, we can see the finish line at this point.
Yeah, it's called the Four Corners Project. And Aaron, that's where you kind of come in. Talk to us about what sort of the vision is for this project.
Okay, so the town and the FDA are working with BL companies to redesign the Four Corners. We're really trying to make it more of a community space, kind of pedestrian streetscape enhancements, because already there's always, you know, kids riding their bikes around, people walking, people in and out of the businesses. They're very much a part of the community. So what we are working with, you know, BL companies is to come up with a plan that will enhance the street, make it more pedestrian friendly. And the SBA has been raising money for this project. We had $1 million goal, and we're at about $900,000 now, which is fantastic. We've gotten money through state grants from our state elected officials, really worked hard on that. The Sacred Heart University gave us a $100,000 donation. The town of Fairfield gave a $100,000 donation. So we're really, and the Stratfield Village Association has raised a bunch of money over the last few years through our Party in the Park and other fundraisers. So we're really just hoping to get over the finish line with these bricks, which will help the community, you know, kind of give families a chance to leave their mark in the community, but also help rebuild this area for our community.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And I looked at the initial plans of like what this looks like, the layout of it. I gotta tell you, it's beautiful. It looks like almost like out of like a Bar Harbor or like a Newport. It's very friendly and welcoming, and it's great for, like you said, pedestrians, bicycles. There are a lot of elementary school kids in that area. Unkowa's not that far. You guys are like right down the street from Unkowa. You know, it's beautiful. You've got another elementary school right up the hill from there. So it's really, really nice what you guys have come up with. So for the fundraising campaign with the bricks, give us some of the logistics. How much is it? When can people ask for it? How many do you have available? All that good stuff.
Okay. We just launched a week ago today, and we've had a really great response so far. So what we have available, if you go to StratfieldVillageAssociation.org, there's a link right in the middle of the top of our page that will take you to the Bricks R Us page. You can buy a 4x4 brick for $100, which gives you three lines of text. You can buy an 8x8 brick for $200, which gives you six lines of text. And we also have an 8x8 corporate brick for $500, and you can have your company's logo etched in, because we do, aside from the Four Corners businesses, we do have a lot of people in the community who own their own businesses or have their own small businesses who we also want to help them, you know, promote that and be a part of this.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love this idea. I think it's really neat. So how long do people have to, I guess, apply or purchase one of these bricks? Like, how long are you guys accepting donations to get these bricks done?
So we've broken this up into two 5-week buying periods, just so we're not constantly hounding people over the next, you know, several months for this. Like I said, the first period started last week, and we'll go through, you know, the next 5 weeks. And then the next period will be Monday, April 19th for the 5 weeks we have. We think about 1,000 bricks. The plans are not 100% at this point, so we are not exactly sure where the bricks will go, but we're hoping right on that corner by Mayoni's, where there's a lot of foot traffic, you know, and a lot of people coming and going, so they're a high visibility. We're really excited so far with everything that we've seen, and we're actually going to be doing an SBA spotlight on our Facebook page, where a couple of times a week we spotlight a family or someone who's bought a brick, why they bought it, you know, what kind of ties them to the community. We can't be together right now and do like a big launch, so we wanted to kind of keep the interest going and also, you know, spotlight people who are supporting the neighborhood.
I think that's so neat. Now, when do we think this project's going to be done?
So we are looking at summer 2021. So,
that's not far.
It's going to be here before we know it. We, you know, it's a project that our organization has been working on for 3 or 4 years, and to see it all come to fruition is pretty cool. You know, we've as Aaron said, we're close to finishing up the designs, just consulting with some of the different organizations within town to make sure that everybody's happy with the design. So our goal right now is looking like we're trending towards breaking ground in the summer.
Well, my sister is going to be thrilled because we're all very big fans of like the Chinese food place down there. We love mayonnaise. That's a go-to for us. So
oh, yeah.
I mean, she like lives there. When she comes home from college, she's literally, if she's not home, she's at mayonnaise. So
right. There
you go. So we're very excited. Well, both Dylan and Aaron, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this. Again, the website is StratfieldVillageAssociation.org if you are interested in buying a brick. Thank you so much, you guys, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
No problem. All right, I'm hungry. No, seriously, I am. So I don't know why I do this to myself. I have my mom come on every week, and I love having her come on. She's got the best recipes. She's literally the best cook I know. But mom, I'm always like really hungry right around this time whenever we have the show, like right around 9:30, and I know I'm done in a half hour, like all the food cravings pop up and then there you are. And I really want this soup. Like we ran out of it so fast on Tuesday, literally so fast. And this is a brand new recipe, isn't it, mom?
Sunday.
What? What'd you say?
I said I'm going to go because it went so fast because there's so many of us. But I said the next time I'm going to the grocery store, I'm going to make like a double so I could send it home with everyone.
Oh, okay. So you're going to make that, you said, on Sunday.
Yeah, because it's mine and Dad's cookie day.
You guys are so cute. I talked to Dad, Mom. I don't know if you heard early in the show, but I said to Dad, I was like, you need to get one of those bricks in downtown Fairfield for MacMan. And he's like, yeah, he's all about it. I don't know if you heard about the brick thing, but he's totally going to get a brick.
Oh, good. No, I don't know. I don't know if I was out doing the farm animals when that part came on.
You probably were, but I'll play you the segment. But yeah, I think Dad's going to get a brick, which I think is really cool.
I think it's great because you know what? You kids all have bricks at North Stratfield School.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. I forgot.
We should look at them because they were all nicknames.
We should. We totally should. Yeah, it's yeah, that's, I forgot we have bricks at North Stratfield School.
Like,
that's,
I think
so
Nicholas
funny.
Was Nick Jr.
Yes.
And Matthew was Batman, and you were Luntz, and Joski, and
was
Limbo.
Joski. Yeah, that's so funny. Yes, we should go look for that brick. We should go
I
walk there.
I thought so, too.
Yeah, we'll take Chase and we'll go for a walk.
We'll just
there.
We'll put bricks everywhere.
I love that. I love that concept. Well, for anyone who wants to make a really hearty soup, we heard earlier that Bill said it's going to be a really cold weekend. Like, we're not going to get out of the 20s this weekend. So
yeah. This
is the perfect time to make a hearty soup and make a lot of it because this recipe is so good. It was so good, Mom. So how do you make the potato and broccoli soup? Like, I may have to make it today, just because I don't know if I could wait till Sunday. So how do you make it?
Well, I'm just giving you the recipes, of course. I mean, the ingredients for, a regular pot of soup. But so you're going to need olive oil. You're going to need onion. You're going to need some chopped carrots, like about a cup. You're going to need some minced garlic. You're going to need your fresh broccoli florets and around 2 pounds of white potatoes, a couple of bay leaves. So they call for a half teaspoon of ground mustard. I couldn't find it, so I eliminated it. I don't think it mattered.
Yeah, it didn't matter at all. So there you go. Don't even worry
about
that.
Exactly. And then your chicken stock, like 30, around 32 ounces. Now, I used to kind of always use like bouillon and boil it, but now they have this stuff that's supposedly better than bouillon. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, it's kind of nice because you don't have to boil your water. You just put it in the pot, add your water. And so those are your ingredients, and then a cup of half and half. And, of course, you can always salt and pepper it to your liking.
Okay. All right. So I've got all the ingredients here. Now, what do I do?
So you start, in your pot with your olive oil. Now, I like to, since you're going to add your carrots and garlic and onion, You know, calls for 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Well, I just, you know, me, I just pour it because I like, you know, most of the bottom to be just slightly covered, mm-hmm. only because you're, you know, sauteing your, you know, your full onion, which has to be chopped, and your carrots, which need to be chopped, and your garlic, whether you want to chop that or you want to use the Vince garlic. You put that all in, and, you know, you cook that until it's kind of brown.
Okay.
Then you add around, you know, it calls for like 5 cups of broccoli florets. I don't know how much I added, which made the soup really thick. I kind of over add.
Yes.
And then the potatoes, you know, I got a 5-pound bag of potatoes. I estimated what 2 pounds would be. Probably ended up putting in a little more of that. But, you know, you peel them, you cut them, and you kind of, like, cut them in, you know, like, see, you see me cutting, like,
I do. You're cutting vigorously.
Down the middle,
it's, yeah, be
half
careful.
Inch, and
be
then
careful.
You know, they're flat,
yep.
and like a potato chip, and then I kind of cut it in the middle, cut it again in the middle, you know, make it like a star and plop it in.
I gotcha, yeah, so slice and dice it, babe. So you threw in your broccoli, you threw in your potatoes. Now what do you do?
Your bay leaves. Your brown mustard if you have it, your salt and pepper.
Okay.
And then you kind of let that all simmer covered together.
Okay. So then what?
They, you know, at this point they tell you to discard the bay leaves. But, you know, to me, whoever gets the bay leaf means it's good luck in Italian. So
I got the bay. I meant to tell you, Mom, I got the bay leaf on Tuesday.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes,
so that's
yes,
about it.
Yes.
That's good. Dad and I got the bay leaves.
It's always good luck. Now, I don't like to puree my soups because I feel like you kind of lose some of the heartiness.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I got a potato masher, and once this all was softened, I mashed it all with a mashed potato. So there were still plenty of, like, little chunks along the way.
It was so good. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm mashing it. So therefore, it's like kind of like semi-chunky.
Yes.
Then, you know, in the middle of all this, you want to add your chicken stock. Now, whether you want to buy it in the carton, 32 ounces, or whether you want to use bouillon or whatever you want to do, you add all that in. And then you simmer that for a while, and then at the end I stir in the half and half and salt and pepper it, stir it all really well, and then what I ended up doing was I trimmed some, you know, steamed broccoli just on top for a garnish, and you know, you can add, you know, green onions, you can add cheese, some crumbled bacon, you can add sour cream. I eliminated all that. I just served the soup with some oysterettes.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was just so good. So
yeah,
I just wrote it all down. I literally wrote word for word everything you just said.
And you know what's so crazy about it?
What's so crazy?
It really was so simple because you just kind of like, I mean, while I was cooking the other stuff, you just put all this in there in the beginning in your, you know, in your kind of like your Dutch oven, like your pot with the
mm-hmm.
top.
Yep.
And it all kind of steams in there together.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I kind of mashed potato it. And I don't know, it just really ended up coming out so good. I think the half and half, you know, makes it rich enough. I don't think you need all the cheese and, you know, sour cream, especially if you're, you know.
No, you're watching your weight and all that like we are. No, it was perfect exactly the way it was without any added. No, it really was. It was so good and it was so creamy and I would highly recommend it to anyone. So,
yeah,
all right, Mom.
I'm going to make a double thing on it on
Thank
Sunday
you.
When we're cooking. Or
That'd
maybe
be great.
I'll do it tonight when Dad and I are hanging out. So anyway, just to end this, I know you all got to go, but Dad and I watched the Star Wars yesterday with BB-8.
Did Dad stay awake?
Until the very last minute when I had to give him a little clock in to wake him up.
That's amazing, though. He stayed awake for all of episode 7. That's incredible. I can't wait to talk to you guys about it after the show. That's awesome.
I can't wait either.
Oh, that's so, oh my gosh, Mom. That's amazing. Well, thank you for this recipe, and thank you for the update on episode 7.
And thank you for having me on your show.
You're hilarious. Thank you so much, Mom. I appreciate
you.
Love you. Love you too, Mom.